You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light. So bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation gave them superhuman insight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, welcome to this show. I'm Eric D. Snyder, that's Jeff Baer. We're the hosts of Movie BS with Baer and Snyder, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. Hey, Jeff, how do we start every single show? Tell the people.
Every single show, always and forever, we start with an iTunes review. They write something, our listeners write something, and if it's amusing or positive, you read it in old-time radio voice.
But we don't have one this week. Nobody has written a new one this week. Yeah, it's sad. It's the first show we've ever done that we don't have an iTunes review to read at the beginning of it. So,
do we just call it a day? Is that it?
Can we we have to be – I think no one would blame us. No one would blame us if we just hung it up right now. But I think because we're professionals, we're going to soldier on. We're going to do the show anyway. And hopefully by next week, someone will have written a new iTunes review. Hopefully.
Hopefully. We can hope.
I mean, I'm not saying it's you, the listener's fault, but – I mean, who else's fault would it be? It's not our job to write iTunes reviews.
What if I'd been writing all of those iTunes reviews?
For all you. But we do have some movies to talk about. One of them, Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is, like most movies, based on a Marvel comic book. It's the latest entry, the latest origin story. This movie starts – this is a character I don't know anything about, and I assume you didn't either.
It starts with monks and locked up books. It starts with to say?
Well, I was going to – yes, monks and locked up books. But then it really starts with this big, crazy, fun fight scene with Tilda Swinton and Mads Mikkelsen. And they're fighting on a London street that is shape-shifting. It reminded me of the part of Inception where they're building worlds and sort of falling on top of itself and all that.
So not only was it Inception, it was Inception taken to the next level. And it was really interesting that that hasn't been touched since Inception. Like nobody has felt that they could pull off something better than or greater than or the evolution of that scene. And this movie really does nail it visually. It borrows, obviously, from that concept and raises the bar a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's not like Inception invented the idea of changing perspective and
– No, but like I don't feel like technology-wise we've seen this manipulation on this scale since Inception. That's all I meant.
And it's a great way to kick off the movie because it's really exciting and different and looks different and new and it's fun. And it's also smart because after that it's kind of a while before the movie gets up to speed again. So it was smarter than to put that there to let us know we got to set some things up, but we'll get to it.
Most movies would be like, hey, this is going to happen in the third act. Just sit down and relax because this will come, we swear. But they decided there would be another way to do it, and thank goodness they did.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's an arrogant doctor.
Dr. Stephen Strange, a brilliant but arrogant neurosurgeon, and he's in an accident. He gets nerve damage to his hands, and he wants to not have nerve damage, and he winds up, long story short, winds up in Nepal studying under the Ancient One, a wise old Tilda Swinton.
She's good here. You know, like most of her performance is supposed to be kind of monotone.
She's the mentor, the sensei, the teacher. Right, she's going to enlighten Dr. Strange's mind to help him access astral energy and spiritual. And he, of course, is skeptical about it. He reminded me of Tony Stark. I mean, the kind of arrogant, sarcastic, rich guy.
Looking out for himself.
Right. Who, over the course of things, comes to realize it's not all about him and he needs to help others.
And Mad's purpose is, I don't even know, how do you say his character's name?
Cassilius, I think is what they called him.
Cassilius. His whole purpose is he wants to tap into this dark – is it a world, a dark age?
A dark dimension. The deal is it's a multiverse. There's unlimited different universes, and Mads is a former student of the Ancient Ones, and he wants to have the dark dimension take over the Earth because in the dark dimension there is no time.
Right, and he's annoyed. He's annoyed about time.
Yeah.
Aren't
we all sometimes? We all have our moments.
Here's the thing, though. I don't know if you know this, but there's been a few movies that have explained it before.
Time,
like death, is what gives meaning to life.
That's a good point.
I don't know if you've ever heard that idea before.
I have heard that. So that part of the movie where Doctor Strange is in Nepal learning these skills, it's kind of almost like a martial arts kind of thing, learning the fighting and learning how to project, learning how to project the you can conjure gateways that you can jump through and show up anywhere.
If you're wearing something on two fingers.
Kind of a special ring on your two fingers. Use that, you conjure a gateway.
Right.
And that's that part of the movie felt too long to me. Felt like it needed to finish that part and move on to the next part.
It felt okay. I would say it felt too long in the way that they were going about it, and nothing seemed to be truly happening as far as like the visual dynamics, his power.
Well, he's learning and getting better, and
And then once he gets it, it kind of like speeds it up a little to the point where they could have had all that time, but like maybe focus on – like once the powers start, what do they do? How do they work? Blah, blah, blah. Because like it's a really interesting world to keep looking at and hearing about. That's how I kept – like I was compelled to know more about this Doctor Strange fellow and the Ancient One and all of this, whereas I haven't felt that way necessarily with the first act and the beginning of the second act with some of the other Marvel movies recently.
This is the first Marvel movie in – a long time that had any kind of new or different concepts that were interesting to hear about. It is still another damn origin story, but at least it was had some ideas in it and visual elements. And the whole thing of getting into this other realms, and there's a mirror world and all these different dimensions that, you know, I guess those things are common in fantasy fiction, but I read a lot of fantasy fiction, and it's fun to see it in a movie and see it look so good. It looks amazingly good, and the way that they blend it with the real world makes it seem like, oh, yeah, this could exist. It feels plausible.
It's plausible enough, and besides Tilda Swinton, we also have Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's working with them. Rachel McAdams
is the – I'm very impressed, by the way. I'm very impressed.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Rachel McAdams is a doctor from his past, and there's some playfulness that comes into that relationship, and it works not in the sense of like reality.
No.
But it's a good playfulness that happens in the hospital later on, and
I like Rachel McAdams in this. She doesn't feel as useless as some of the women have felt in these stories. Fairly useless, but somewhat less useless.
Right. And you said it. I think it's the most dynamic looking Marvel movie I've seen.
The premise lends itself to that kind of thing more than like a Captain America story would.
Our friend saw it with us and mentioned, he's like, I think that's kind of what Green Lantern wanted to be. And you can see that because it is a lot of manipulation of things that aren't there, or creation of weapons that, you know, are more energy based on things. But like, not only that, his whole costume, the way it comes together, I'm a big fan of this costume.
You like a good magic cape?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
I liked that. It made always the possibility of something lighthearted happening in this film, which again, every concept they talk about, like whether it's like, oh, I'm doing this training and I'm not ready yet, or oh, time is shouldn't we all be live forever? Shouldn't that be a possibility? All of that stuff feels – yeah, that's borrowed from all lore of, right. of this fantasy stuff. That's all picked and chosen. But the visual world that is created is so strong that it makes everything that seems ordinary a little bit better. It makes everything rise up. And especially like also Benedict is good in this. I think he really is. I've never seen it. Like, he's weird looking normally, but like,
yeah, he's weird looking.
This was less weird. Like they got the movie star they wanted. I wonder if
the character's hair is supposed to look unnaturally dark. If it's supposed to look, oh yeah, I dye my hair dark, so it doesn't match my eyebrows, or if that's just the way it turned out.
I don't know. He has gray just around the ears.
Yeah. Yeah. So he must not be dying or he's not doing a very good job.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Really good point, though, you bring up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Normally, that's something that I would say. Oh, that's how I sound.
he's good. The movie, it's got some funny stuff. It's not, I feel like it wasn't as funny as it thinks it is.
Well, because it totally relies on the continued belief of Benedict is clever.
Yeah.
Like it goes to that well a few too many times. Yeah. Sometimes better than others. But that's where the comedy lies completely and utterly.
Completely and utterly.
Yeah, both of them.
It's really good. Directed by Scott Derrickson, who made Sinister and a few other things. A few other things, good and bad. Written by, you know Cargill, don't you?
I do.
A little bit? All right.
Yeah.
C. Robert Cargill of Austin, friend of ours. We're friends. I've hung out with him a bit. Had meals with him in groups with others.
I would say
others,
he's a really nice acquaintance of mine.
Yeah, not like a close friend. Not close enough to where I would like pretend to like the movie more than I did.
No, not at all. Yeah.
I thought it was really good. Doctor Strange. I give it a B+.
It's an 8 out of 10.
BS approved.
We did it.
Hooray. Good job, Doctor Strange. Thanks for being different.
Also, throwing it out there, the 3D is good. Do with that what you will.
It is
the
good.
The 3D is good.
The scenes where he goes into other realms, the astral realms, are so trippy. I saw people saying that they're probably awesome if you see them on mushrooms. That's probably true. Very trippy and visual and cool and
I was thinking it was one of the few movies where I was like, I wish I was in the IMAX seeing this thing. I wish it was even bigger.
Mm. And then the other review we have for you this week, Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge. Hmm.
Maybe only one of us should talk about this movie.
Yeah. Why don't you explain to the people what happened here?
All right. So here's exactly what happened. I got to the movie in plenty of time, and then fellow film critic Sean Levy was there, and he and I were chatting while I was also watching the Cubs game on my iPhone. This would, for the listeners, this would have been game 6. So I'm watching that. Then you send me a text being like, oh, I got to wait outside the theater for so-and-so to get back. And my first thought is like, well, he's not the one running this screening. That's weird that he would say that, that you would say that.
Oh, so you already were in the theater when that happened then?
I was already in the theater. And I was like, oh, if I send him a text, I got to stop watching the game.
Oh, my gosh.
So then I didn't do that. And then, I didn't hear from you for a while. And then I was still watching the game, still talking to Sean. And then you sent another text saying, never mind, you're not here anyway. And I was just like, well, no, I'm here. I'm watching the game. Now I feel a little bad. And I forgot that I felt a little bad. So I kept watching the game for a little bit longer.
You didn't think, wait, what does he mean I'm not here? I am here. Where's he?
So I decide to get up and help you get into the theater because you haven't come in yet. And then I go outside and I'm just like, oh no. Like it immediately dawned on me that I might be wrong. But what's weird is, sure, I've been wrong about things before, but this is the first time that I've written down a movie and written the wrong theater down.
Mm.
And so like in my calendar, I had Hacksaw Ridge, Pioneer Place.
Yeah, that was not the location.
That is not the location.
Fortunately,
there was another movie for me to see.
Right, yeah.
So I sat through Moonlight, which we both decided, we'll probably be able to get to see that soon. Don't worry, we'll wait on Moonlight. We'll both see Hacksaw Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
So to the listeners, I'm I'm so sorry that you can only listen to Eric talk about this Mel Gibson movie. I am sorry.
And this also, this is a cautionary tale about the dangers of scheduling movies at the same time as each other. Because, by the way, this week, no screenings. Right. 7 days that's in the right. week. How many hours that is? I don't know how many of that is. 24 times 7. That's how many hours in the week. There's 1 2-hour slot where one movie was scheduled. Then they added a second movie at the exact same time.
Just ridiculous.
Just ridiculous. So I have Hacksaw Ridge to tell you about, and we'll talk about Moonlight once we've both had a chance to see it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. This Hacksaw Ridge starts, it doesn't say inspired by a true story or based on a true story. It says a true story.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I feel like they're setting the bar very high there for accuracy. and it begins, it starts with a bunch of soldiers being set on fire in slow motion. While in voiceover, Andrew Garfield is speaking in a southern drawl, talking about the Bible.
All right. First of all, so do you even – you don't see him. It's a voiceover. Does he pull it off without seeing his mouth? Like, it, does it sound good, southern drawl?
It sounds like a ridiculous, slow southern drawl. I'm from Virginia. Do you remember a few weeks ago we saw a trailer and you closed your eyes so as not to see the trailer like you often do? And I said, guess whose voice that is? You'll never guess. It was Andrew Garfield doing a Virginia Southern drawl.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he is Desmond Doss, who in World War II times, or before that, he's a little boy, and he and his brother are fighting. Their dad is Hugo Weaving, and he was a World War I veteran. Now he's a drunk, and he's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. Hugo Weaving is just ridiculous. But the two boys are having a good old-fashioned fist fight like boys do. And their mom, Rachel Griffiths, is like, boys, what are you fighting about? Break them up. Hoss,
so
whatever
husband's
name is.
Wait a minute.
What?
Does anybody in it? Nobody is actually from the South in this movie so far.
Not so far. No, not really.
Yeah. All right.
And the dad's just like, no, let them fight. That's what boys do. That's approximately Hugo Weaving's southern accent, by the way.
He's not amusing. I'm getting the gist. Hugo is not amusing to you in this movie.
No, he is not. And but then one of the boys, the boy who will grow up to become Andrew Garfield, he picks up a brick and clocks his brother in the head with a brick. Yeah.
Hang on.
Well, this is how he becomes a pacifist. After he almost kills his brother. And that, by the way, that is too far. Pointless fist fighting. That's fine. That's just what boys do. But he hits his brother in the head with a brick, and his dad, is furious now. And so then the dad is like, I'm going to have to whoop you now. But he goes into slow motion. So it's Hugo Weaving saying, I'm going to have to whoop you now. But mom stops him. And anyway, this is all to show how Andrew Garfield grows up to become a pacifist. Because the Lord says, thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not hit thy brother in the head with a brick, etc. So, 15 years later, and now it's World War II, and the brother joins up. The brother we never see again. He joins up for the military, and he's gone from the movie. Forget about him. Forget he ever had a brother. He's gone. Andrew Garfield, whose name is Desmond, I think. Is that what he said? Desmond?
Desmond.
Yes, Desmond Doss. He joins up for the Army, and you're thinking, wait, why would a pacifist, someone who refuses to do any killing, why would he join the military? And that is a question that a lot of people in the movie ask him a lot of times. And he wants to serve his country. He joins up to be a medic. He's good with the medical stuff. He's going to be a medic. He's a conscientious objector, or as he puts it, a conscientious supporter. He wants to help. He's just not going to do any fighting.
Okay.
So, all right, fair enough. Basic training, boot camp, whatever they call that. You got your basic assortment of World War II stereotype soldiers. You got the Italian one from Jersey and the Jewish one and the one calls himself Hollywood and, you know, those guys. And Vince Vaughn is the drill sergeant. And he gives him a hard time. And there's a whole lot of – the first half of the movie is all about Desmond Doss establishing his principles. Not only will he not fight, he will not even pick up a rifle. He will not even touch a rifle. And this becomes an issue.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Not even like for practice or to show like how you can take it apart and clean it or whatever. It will not touch a rifle. And this becomes an issue when – because the higher-ups are like, okay, you can be a medic as long as you qualify in every other category. That's fine. But then he's not qualified in shooting and training and aiming, whatever you have to qualify in for rifle stuff because he won't touch the rifle.
Is it, is it like 25 minutes long, this movie?
So then they have to court-martial him because he won't obey the order. Finally, that all gets cleared up. Finally, an hour into the movie, he finally gets out to the war, Okinawa, 1945. And so then the second half of the movie is pretty good. Once we get past all that ham-handed setting up my principles, and I'm not – because that doesn't make any – and I, you know that I am a person of faith, and that to me doesn't make any sense. I get, okay, I won't kill, but I won't even touch – won't even touch a rifle? Where are you getting that in the Bible? Just saying.
There wasn't that many rifles in the Bible, though,
no,
right?
No, I mean, I not rifles, I suppose. Anyway, that just seems like such a – come on. It's stupid, but whatever. As established, finally, the second half of the movie, we get to see his principles in action, where now he's out in the thick of it, and there's people getting shot, and he's trying to help. And the second half of the movie is pretty good, a really good war movie. There's a sequence that is just gross and bloody and gory, just horrific, just nasty. Because, you know, this is directed by Mel Gibson. You know how he loves people being torn apart and hurt and murdered.
Yes.
It's his favorite thing.
There's somebody called Lucky Ford. Is that Mel Gibson's son, Milo Gibson?
Oh, that could be. I didn't notice that, but yeah. Oh, he does look like him. Yep, he's the sixth child of Mel Gibson.
Does he tear apart his kid in this movie? Does he kill his kid?
That character is one
of... Is that spoilery? It's okay. If it's spoilery, don't tell me.
He's not important. He's one of several characters in that platoon, and I don't remember which of them live and which ones die, as far as that goes. This is funny. I thought that I had finally overcome my Scott Eastwood blindness, because for a while I never recognized Scott Eastwood. I would see him and think, hey, who's this new guy? And it turned out to be Scott Eastwood, who I'd seen before. And I thought, this one, I saw him, I'm like, oh, I recognize him this time. No, it's Sam Worthington. I honestly, the whole movie, thought it was Scott Eastwood. I was so proud of myself for finally identifying him. No, it was Sam Worthington.
Oh, man.
And then in the second half, at the end of the movie, that's all the guys who were given a hard time back in basic training and said, you're just a coward. Oh, they tried to get him to drop out of the army back there at boot camp. Oh, they tried so hard to get him to leave. Mm-hmm. And now at the end, they have to apologize and say, I misjudged you or whatever. Second half is pretty good, harrowing, solid, tense war stuff, and Gibson films it well. The first half is just where it's very ham-fisted and didactic, and we're making a lot of declaratory statements and just corny. But the second half balances it out. So it turns out to be a B-. Hacksaw Ridge.
And Garfield kills, like, what, 400, 500? Is that how he, like, became famous?
Oh, no, he's true to his word.
Oh.
Never doesn't touch a rifle, but he saves a lot of people. He winds up, in real life, he won the Medal of Honor. I think that's the one. Some big medal that you don't usually get without having to kill some guys. Right. But he was a hero, saved a lot of people. And lest you doubt that this was a true story, at the end of the movie, don't worry, there's some video footage of the real guys, the real soldiers, talking about the war. So don't worry. Mel Gibson proves that it was a true story. He doesn't just say that. He backs it up. So there you go. Andrew Garfield. Andrew Garfield, the problem with him is that his neck and his head are the same width.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
This looks like a pencil. Or like a Beaker of Beaker and Bunsen. That's what he looks like. Hard to take him seriously romantically. There is a girl. Teresa Palmer plays his girlfriend back home. She plays...
Teresa Palmer, feel free to look through her IMDb page. She has the most misses... of like anyone her age, she's just continuously employed, and she's never in a great movie.
No, I don't. It's not usually her fault, though. I mean, she's fine.
No,
she's
I'm
all
not
right.
blaming her. I'm not blaming her.
She's. We've said this before. She's who you get in your movie if you want a Kristen Stewart type, but you want someone who will smile.
Right.
And she gets to play concerned wife on phone. Oh, she's never on the phone though. She is concerned wife though back home.
Is she writing letters?
Yeah, although that's all just in basic training. Once he's out in the war, we don't see anyone back home because the war part of it only takes like a couple of days of time.
Oh, no, that's not true. It lasted years.
No, but for this guy in the movie, the war is only a couple of days.
I'm just happy they were able to finally tell a story about World War II.
Right?
On the big screen.
It's the overlooked war. We hardly hear any stories from that. I'm glad that it's a World War II story and that Mel Gibson was not on the Nazi side. Let's be honest. That could have gone either way. And so those are the movies. Also Trolls, but we didn't see Trolls.
We didn't see Trolls.
Nope. Cartoon with Justin Timberlake did some songs for it, I think.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we have an update for you. We have an urgent update on our oldest listener.
Did you insert the beep, 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 beep?
Yes, of course. I put that in, obviously.
Okay, good, good, good.
This just in. Last week, since nobody yet had claimed to be our oldest listener, Jeff suggested that just anyone could say it.
Because so it would be true.
Yeah, that's true. So we did have someone who's 40 who claimed it, and so for a minute he was our oldest listener. But then we heard from two 60-year-olds. Oh, we got a 52.5-year-old, actually, who is the father of our youngest listener, Charlie. But no, 52.5,
oh, nice.
Not our oldest, sorry. Sorry, Jim, you got to be a lot older than that to win this game. And then we heard from a couple of 60-year-olds, a 57-year-old, and then a couple of 60-year-olds. And then, I thought 60 was it. I thought the two 60-year-olds were going to be in a tie.
Right.
And then we heard from Tom. Tom says, I'm one of those folks who figure they can't possibly be your oldest listener, but maybe I am. Using the precision Jeff employs for describing his boys' ages, I am 69.7 years old.
Ooh.
Yeah, 69.7. So, Tom, as far as we know, you are our oldest listener at 69.7. Yeah. He found me on the internet years ago and then started listening to the show, too. And he says, I don't often actually attend a movie, but I like to keep up with pop culture, and I especially like hearing your intelligent and lighthearted conversations each week.
Aw.
Thanks, Tom. Sorry for all the mean jokes we made about old people.
Well, not him. Once you get to know an old person, you realize
exactly. They're
not all like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
So now Tom's different than, you know, all the others.
From most of the other olds, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you, listeners, if you can beat 69.7 years old, let us know. But otherwise, Tom, you are our oldest listener. And we'll have further updates as events warrant. Let's talk about the DVDs that came out this week.
All right, sir.
There aren't very many. Just going to let you down easy. Gently. There's not very many. I'm sorry. Star Trek
It'll
Beyond.
Be okay.
Star Trek Beyond. That was okay.
That was good, fun stuff. I believe I called it Enterprise porn. Like, the starships had never been through more stuff than in this one.
And we see the nooks and crannies of it. And yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Lots going on over there. And that's Enterprise.
That was the main thing that I took away. Because otherwise, it feels like a really good episode.
Mm-hmm. It's a really low stakes adventure.
Right.
And even like with the character development, nothing new really happens with the characters from the last one. So once they've made a bunch of these in the new Star Trek, this will be the one that you could skip and not really miss anything plot wise, mm-hmm. But it's fun. And especially, you know, for a dollar on Redbox, or whatever. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Totally. Totally.
And then Bad Moms also on DVD now this week. Bad Moms is worth seeing.
Bad Moms is worth seeing, especially if you're a mom. Reports are from my sister, who's a mom, a Midwestern type, if you will. She and her girlfriends just loved it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We loved one in particular. Who is that in the film that stole the movie for us? She was the raunchy one.
Yeah, the one we love was Catherine Hahn. Catherine Hahn, who has been like one of the high points of everything she's in, but she's never has a large role. And this is the closest that Hollywood mm-hmm. has come yet to fully harnessing the powers of Catherine Hahn. She's
and
very
Bad
funny.
Moms, Bad Moms turned out to be a bit of a hit. Now, some people might remember that I predicted at the end of Bad Moms, there would be a teaser for the potential sequel and they would be Bad Dads.
Mm.
That did not happen.
It did not
I was
happen.
Terribly wrong. Instead, Bad Dads is now coming to theaters July 14th, 2017. July 14th, my birthday.
That is your birthday. That's right.
Clearly, they were like, oh, we're going to mess with this guy. He thinks we're going to put a teaser on the end. No. And then to rub a little salt on the wound, we'll make Bad Dads go up on his birthday. It's going to be counter-programming to War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh.
You know how you've been waiting for that one, Eric?
I kind of. Yeah. I mean, I've like actively been waiting, but now that you mention it, yes, I have been waiting for that.
So there we go.
Doesn't it seem like an odd choice to do Bad Dads instead of Bad Moms 2? Because if there's anything that there's already a lot of, it's comedies about dads being bad at being dads. Like, you know, for example, every single sitcom.
Right. Not only that, it's the guys that do The Hangover. Like, those are the ones that wrote and directed Bad Moms. Mm-hmm. So it's almost just like, hey, come on. You found a different area to explore. Right. Don't revert back to the idiot guys.
Right back to the old comfort zone.
Yeah
well. Then Nine Lives. It's the movie where Kevin Spacey becomes a cat. It's not a good movie, and there's no reason you should see it. Unless you like bad movies.
It is a documentary, though, right? Like, he actually does become a cat?
Funny story. He did become a cat, and they did make a documentary about it, but this is a fictionalized version.
Oh, okay.
This is a fictional account, not the actual documentary.
So at the end, it's not like a picture of the cat and then a picture of Kevin's face?
No. This is a fictionalized version. Very confusing to have two movies about Kevin Spacey turning into a cat. On the other hand, it was a pretty big event when it happened. I mean, I think you remember all the news coverage. No surprise, there'd be more than one movie. Want to talk about that. So that's DVDs that you can watch if you want to. Hey, Jeff. Hey, what'd you watch?
Well, for family movie night, I would have watched Little Mermaid with my kid, who's now four.
That's right. He turned four. He turned four last week.
That's right. It was a very good party. Good feedback all around. Okay. Pin the Tail on the Dinosaur, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. And a 4-year-old's birthday is much more exciting than a 3-year-old's birthday. To the one turning that age. Like he was locked in. He was excited.
Yeah, four is probably about the earliest birthday that is likely to mean anything to the kid.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
Yeah. Good.
So anyway, instead of that, I watched my Cubs win game five all alone at a bar.
Oh, that's right.
Until my other friend finally joined. But it was a really good experience. It was a lot of good bonding with the Cubs. Mm-hmm. It was good. It was important for me to have them win at Wrigley. And here's the thing. You guys are listening right
now.
That's
right. By the time you hear this, there will be a winner, and we don't know who it is. Yeah, yeah. I remember now, Sunday night, you tweeted about being at Buffalo Wild Wings watching the game by yourself. And Sam Fragoso replied, I love everything about this tweet, which was funny because I was going to say, this is the saddest tweet I've ever read in my life. Every word of it is so sad.
That's how I felt.
And I couldn't come hang out with you because I didn't want to, but also because my parents were in town. I had to amuse them. And they are not easily amused. And I'm just kidding. They are. They're very easily amused.
Did they like the waterfall?
They did. We went out to Multnomah Falls, and they liked that very much. We went also to – and I was so glad – oh, man. My dad wanted to hike all the way up to the top. So I was so glad my mom was there to give me an excuse not to. Like, come on, Dad. I mean, we got mom. We don't have the right shoes. Nah, come on. We got to be better prepared. It's a mile. It's a mile uphill. It's a mile uphill. I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
I was not psychologically prepared to walk a mile uphill. But, yes, Multnomah Falls was lovely. And we also went to the biscuit place, Pine State Biscuits.
Oh, nice. You know, it's not a mile both ways uphill, right? You get to go down then.
Well, it's a mile. Yeah, the second mile then is downhill. I get that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's not that far. Would you get at Pine State? But no, I won't get into that. It's a really good place if you're ever in Portland. Pine State Biscuits.
Yeah. We had some good stuff there. Anyway, so the point is you did not watch Little Mermaid because you were watching the baseball game.
That's right.
Okay. What I watched John Carpenter's The Fog from 1980, a horror film that I had not seen before. There's several John Carpenter blind spots I have. I was glad to fill this one.
Yeah, that's one for me.
And it's pretty good. I rather enjoyed it.
Were you nervous?
It's not. It's more of a mood kind of thing, I guess, than a scary kind of thing. I was into it, you know. It's a good Halloween season kind of thing to watch, because it's not like give you nightmares, but it's, you know, good goosebumpy kind of fun. And it makes you afraid of the fog, in case that's something you wanted, to be afraid of fog. And then I also watched A Woman Under the Influence. You familiar with this movie?
No.
So 1974, directed by John Cassavetes with Jenna Rollins. She was nominated for an Oscar. And it's Peter Falk is her husband. And it's about this woman who's just sort of having a – sort of cracking up, sort of going a little bit nutty. And they wind up having to put her in a committer for a while. But it's a really good performance by her, Jenna Rollins, of this woman who at first you think, oh, she's an alcoholic and she does seem to have a drinking problem, but it's not just that. Like, there's mental issues, and she's like very just goofy and funny and flirtatious, the kind of woman that people would be like, oh, that crazy Mabel, that nutty Mabel. But she's like actually kind of nutty. But the performance is really, really deep and not a caricature of craziness. And Peter Falk is really good too.
Did he solve the mystery?
He did solve the mystery in the end. And the answer was that she was crazy. That was the solution. So there you go. That's what I watched. And I guess that's the show then for this week. We didn't have a lot to tell you about, but Doctor Strange is really good.
It is visually compelling.
Oh, man, we like that. We like that crazy, trippy Doctor Strange stuff. And then Hacksaw Ridge is okay. If you think you would like a World War II movie, you probably will. Brace yourself for that one sequence, though. Ooh, gore and guts and intestines and limbs flying off and whatnot. Whew, boy. That war was something else, that World War II.
Yeesh.
Yeah, let's not do that again. And so until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.